Hello and welcome to the Browns Blitz. I'm your host, Rod Bloom, and this is episode 30 on Wednesday, December the 4th. Very happy to have two great guests or kind of co-hosts with me today. I don't know who I'm supposed to introduce first. I hope you guys don't get offended now.
Wait a minute. Is this episode 30?
This is episode 30.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's crazy. Well, I know Lauren won't mind, so I'm going to introduce Terry Phelan first.
Yo.
And Lauren Dodge. Lauren Dodge is an excellent writer for Big Play. Terry is somebody who, I'm just going to say, Terry's collaborated a lot with me on my writing and really helped me a lot. And just very happy to talk to both of these guys tonight.
I just want to know where we were for the other 29 episodes, Rod.
Well,
you know, I don't think that 30 episodes in, you know, we're not the second team here, Rod. We're not Duck Hodges or whatever his name is.
Duck Hodges.
You know.
You bring a good point. Maybe I should have added that after. You know, I could have thrown that little intro in after I recorded with you guys.
I mean, the 29 other episodes, who were these people?
Right.
How could you leave me and Lauren until episode 30? Anyway, it's good to be here. Good to be with Lauren and my friend, Rod.
Yes, yes. Thank you guys for putting up with me for however long we're going to be on this podcast. I'm just going to be awkwardly laughing in the background probably through the whole thing, so I apologize in advance.
That's all right. Hey, let's get a little bit of this out of the way because we kind of had a rough week this week. Actually, before we even talk football, we're going to dive into the Blitz beverages. It's kind of been a tough week. I've been busy with work, and Twitter's been a dark place this week. So I'm drinking a Platform New Cleveland beer right now, just what? To kind of take the edge off.
This is bourgeoisie beer. What are you drinking? Well, Platform what?
Platform. It's called a New Cleveland.
Oh my
New
God.
Cleveland.
I'm drinking an old Dasani water.
You're drinking a water? You guys are both drinking water. Jeez.
Yeah, I'm out of a dirty cup.
That's what I get for recording with you guys at what, 9 o'clock at night? So
I'm drunk on this water, I can tell you that much right now.
Yeah, well,
I got a pee, by the way.
Jeez. Okay, anyways.
Moving on.
You guys are drinking water. All right, we've got the beverages out of the way. Let's get the formality of just talking for a couple minutes about last Sunday's game, about the Browns losing to Steelers 20-13 in Pittsburgh, a game that I think we probably all thought or hoped that the Browns had a good shot to win and make a statement and kind of – you know, turn things around and feel like, the Browns are on the up, the Steelers are on the down now, but it didn't happen. So just kind of give me your takeaways or how you guys are feeling about it right now without spending a whole bunch of time on it, because we've got better things to talk about.
You go, Laura.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, it's crazy. I try not to put too much thought into the games and getting like super excited. So I kind of like go week to week. But I did, I felt good about last week. You know, and I wasn't like super pumped, you know, where I was like, they're going to win for sure. But I was like, we should have this. Like, there's no doubt in my mind that we can't do it. Brad, cause like you said, you know, the Steelers, you know, they're kind of, you know, they're on the down and then they've lost a lot of key players in their, you know, in their game. So I was like, we've had three great games. We're definitely progressing. Mm-hmm. So we got this. But it's funny because my husband the whole week is like, nope. He is like such a Debbie Downer when it comes to the Browns. So he had zero faith in them. And I blame it on him, actually. But so I'm bummed that we couldn't pull it off. And we had every opportunity to win. Like, 100 times. So it's very disappointing. Frustrating. I think that's the word everybody's been using.
Yeah.
But I came into the season with zero expectations. So last year, this game, I probably would still be upset and crying about it. We lost, and I was like, eh, it is what it is. You know, I still think, you know, we're going to improve. But right now, we're just kind of on the struggle bus.
Hey, Rod, doesn't she sound like Mary Kay Cabot a little bit?
What? Oh, don't do that to her.
What?
What? I mean, she does. Anyway, that's, yeah. I think she's right. It has been a struggle bus. You know, I think it's been a continuation of the whole year, really. I mean, you start off with Tennessee, and, you know, people are expecting to blow them out. And, you know, it just, they've been underachieving all year, and it's mind-boggling with the talent that they cannot put it together, you know, in stretches. You know, they beat some decent teams. Baltimore, Buffalo's okay. But, you know, you lose to Denver with their, you know, their third-string quarterback, and now you lose to some guy named Duck. And they didn't look good doing any of it. So
No,
they didn't. They didn't.
I mean, it's very strange, and it's a lot different from what I think a ton of people were expecting coming into the year, especially after they finished last year. So.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, I agree with both of you guys.
I mean, you know, you look at, you know, I think the offensive line has been a big problem for the team, and that's, you know, Mayfield's on the run constantly, and you know, I think it started back in the Rams game. Aaron Donald was in the backfield more than Nick Chubb was, so you know, Mayfield's running for his life, and you know, Pittsburgh was all over him too. I mean, they hit him and popped him and sacked him, and it's something's got to get fixed, and I think it's that offensive line. So
yeah, you're right. And how do you do great 1 week, and then you just forget how to play football the next? That's what it looks like. You know, our defense, they didn't know how to turn around and catch a ball, block a ball, play defender. They just, it was crazy. I'm going to use the word crazy a lot because that's what it is.
No, it's, she's right. That's what it looked like. I mean, this Duck Hodges guy was throwing rainbows up, and you know, none of the defenders were turning, whether it was, you know, Greedy or Denzel. Nobody was turning except the, you know, the receivers saw the punt coming down. That's what it looked like, was punts. But,
yeah.
It's just, it's, you know, it's mind-boggling that this team can never put it together. I mean, I remember talking to you last summer, Rod, and we were talking, this was a fantasy team coming up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could start their whole lineup and be a, you know, Lauren plays fantasy sports, you could start their whole team and probably do all right. It's probably good that we didn't do that. So
right.
I've almost tried that a few weeks in fantasy. We did
last place.
It almost worked against the Dolphins.
that is true. We had one victory. You'd be what, 1-10 or something in fantasy football. But it's just mind-boggling that they cannot put it together. You know, in consistent stretches. So,
yeah. So rather than really concentrating on this upcoming game against the Bengals, because we got four games left, and I think the Browns supposedly have a 6% chance of making the playoffs. We know they're not making the playoffs at this point. it's not going to happen. So, what, you know? To me, I guess it's really at the point where, you know, I think the players are still, or at least should be playing. The players and coaches should be playing with the idea that, oh, there's still a shot we could make this. But the reality is they have to be looking at evaluation for the next four games, evaluation going into next season. So how are you guys looking at the next four games? Do you care at all? You know, is there anything you want to see happen over these next four games?
Go, Laura.
Okay. I want them to keep winning. I always want them to win, whether they, you know, they have a chance in the playoffs or not. I don't care about draft orders or what we could pick. Like, to me, I just want to win. And even though there isn't, you know, much to look forward to if we do win, because all of these other teams, they have to lose in order for us to even advance to the playoffs. But I don't know. That's just how I am. Just being a Browns fan, you know, you lose one week, you know, you're sad, and then you forget about it the next week, and you're cheering for them again. I always want them to do better. I always want them to win. So I'm hoping they're gonna win out, and then I came into the season. My only expectation was that they did at least a game better than they did last year. So if they do that, I'm fine.
Yeah, let's hope so.
Well, I'm looking at something different. You know, at this point, the wins and losses are really irrelevant. Obviously, they're not making the playoffs, and if they do, you know, I'll eat my crow. But I want to see good football. I want to see intelligent football. I want to see my quarterback getting smashed 25 times a game. Offensive line jumping off.
Mm-hmm.
They got some tough games coming up. Cincinnati twice, and the Ravens will obviously be tough, even though I'm not a big believer in their running back that plays quarterback. But I think the Cardinals game is actually going to be very tough for them in Arizona. So
yeah, it's definitely not a gimme. Definitely,
that's one of those that you looked at before the season started and said, well, that's a win. But we've had four or five of those, and none of them have turned into wins so far. So
right.
So I just want to see good football, like a normal football team. You watch Green Bay and Seattle on a Sunday night, and you're watching normal football. Can we get that for once in this town?
That would be nice. Yeah, sure. I like that.
Yeah.
I like, you want to win, but you want to do it looking good.
What?
You want to look looking, like, you're looking for growth is what you're looking for.
I'm looking for competitiveness. I'm looking, they don't need to jump off 25 times a game, offensively or defensively. And also have Freddie, call a good game. It just good football. And mm-hmm. We haven't seen that in a damn long time. So you get spurts of it against, obviously Baltimore, where Chubb ran wild on them. And Mayfield was sharp, but we just don't get enough of it. It's irritating.
Yeah, there's not been a lot of it this season. Yeah, I would agree with you. So, Terry, you had a topic you kind of wanted to talk about, which was kind of just kind of looking at how things, I guess, compared, or how this season compares to last season, or what's going on. Why don't you elaborate on that and kind of get us kicked off?
Well, I mean, obviously we can't, after last season, I think everybody was pretty optimistic. I know Lauren was, and I know you were.
Mm-hmm.
I think when they traded for Odell, the expectation shot through the roof, obviously. So you're taking Odell Beckham and you're replacing Breshad Perriman with one of the best receivers in the NFL. So obviously the expectation shot through the roof, but I think there's something different about this year's team. The main thing to me is, in the last, 8-10 games that Kitchens was the coach,
mm-hmm.
or basically took over as offensive coordinator, Mayfield was hit 10 times. That's it.
Yeah.
And the nearest team, I think, was Pittsburgh, and they were in the 40s. So for Cleveland to be, first of all, we never see that with this offensive line, but, they were winging the ball up and down the field, and Mayfield had plenty of time. I think that's really the biggest change with this year, because he's running for his life, as we talked about. And he's not as freewheeling to me as he was last year. He doesn't have that same gunslinger type, type of play. So.
Yeah, I agree with you. Let me interject and then we'll kick it over to Lauren. But to me, some of that with Baker, you can definitely trace some of that to the offensive line. I think you can trace some of it to it being his second season, with teams having film on him and giving him different looks. It's kind of a combination, and maybe it's just kind of him just kind of trying to figure things out a little bit in a second
season.
Well,
I mean, you can say that, but he was I don't mean to, say you're wrong, but I'm he's a far superior quarterback to Lamar Jackson in Baltimore. And they built that offensive line, that whole offense around him. And the guy can't throw the football 10 yards down the field.
I agree with you. I agree with you completely.
And now he's in the talk. I think we thought at the beginning of the year Mayfield might be in the talk for MVP. And now this guy, who can't mm-hmm. really throw the football, is the leading MVP getter. So
Well, their formula's worked this season.
Yeah, it's worked all right.
Yep. Yeah. Lauren?
Hi. yeah, I don't know. I don't, you know, I have a horrible memory, so I usually forget, you know, come Monday what happened the day before. But, you know, and I don't analyze, you know, I don't analyze film. I don't go back to look and see, oh, you know, Baker had this much time in the pocket or so-and-so wasn't open. There's definitely a difference, and I definitely think it's the offensive line. He needs more time, but at the same time, he's got to get rid of the ball quicker. Just because you're getting, you know, a couple extra seconds doesn't mean you need to take them. You need to look down and you need to find your guy open. And if he's not open, you need to go to a different guy. A lot of times I think maybe they're forcing, you know, trying to force certain plays, you know, and then you got, you know, Chubb's running a slant, you know, and they don't throw it to him. And you're just looking over to the right. I think there's a lot of things. And I'm not, you know, super great with, like I said before, like analyzing and seeing what's going on. But, you know, I definitely think that he's calmed down a little bit. But in the beginning of this year, I think he was, like, super spazzy. He wasn't playing his game.
Spazzy.
He was trying too hard. So definitely, he's kind of gotten to his own, you know, the last couple games. I just remember, like, the beginning of last year, like, I was just, like, super wasted going into these games because I just couldn't stand, you know, it was either, like, watch the Browns lose or just get drunk, you know. And then towards the end, I actually stopped drinking so I could focus on the game and watch it. So that's how it's changed. I think we're getting better because I'm walking out, you know, remembering where I was during these games. I think that's a positive.
Yeah. Remembering where you parked.
That's positive. That's positive. I like it.
Let me take you guys back. I mean, the first game of the year, you got Greg Robinson kicks. I don't remember who the defender was, but, you know, he gets thrown out of the game. So, what, they backed up at their own two, and they put McCray at right tackle and move Hubbard to left tackle. And Cameron Wake on first down blows past McCray like he's not standing there and sacks Mayfield for a safety, obviously. And
yeah.
That made it just that the offensive line, and it's weird because they brought in some Green Bay guys, and they also brought in the, you know, the Green Bay offensive line coach, who's
he's a very highly respected guy.
Well, I mean, you look at Green Bay's offensive line, and I haven't heard of half of those guys until they made the Pro Bowl, and they're doing something there. So
James Campen is a very highly respected coach. So I find it hard to believe that he is the issue with the offensive line.
I think it's the level of talent and the depth they have. I mean, you know, you're taking backups and people that were getting cut, like Tepper and McCray, and they grabbed somebody else from Green Bay. I don't remember who it was. It, you know, right at the end of preseason.
And yeah, I think that we, at least I figured that they had, you know, I think I was too dependent on Dorsey to, you know, feeling that Dorsey, oh, he'll find some guys, you know, to plug those gaps. If he let Zeitler go, surely he's got somebody in mind for that spot. Well, you know, with all the guys he brought in, I figured it would be okay, and it hasn't been okay. It's been okay for, like, what, maybe three games? I mean, the first Pittsburgh game, they look great. Mm-hmm. But most games, they've looked like crap. They just have.
Yeah. And even the run game lately. Chubb is not, if you notice over the last three or four games, Chubb hasn't broken off big chunk plays. And especially against, I think the two Pittsburgh games, he really didn't do much. I mean, he'd get 3-4 yards a pop maybe, but none of those.
I mean, he's working hard and he's getting his, whatever, 70, 80 yards, but he's not breaking those big runs, longer runs like you expect.
Well, yeah, even in these two Pittsburgh games, you know, and they're a pretty decent front, but I don't remember any 15, 20 yarders that ring off my top of my head. I know there was none last Sunday, so.
The first game was similar. Go ahead, Lauren.
No, I was saying I would know because he's on my fantasy team.
Yeah.
So
he definitely wasn't doing what Chubb normally does when he has the ball.
No, why would I imagine that you have a Chubb on your fantasy team? Or why was what?
Always, always. That's the first. You always have to have a Chubb on your fantasy team. That's what he said.
What? I think we lost Rod on that one.
Click.
I'm with you. Yeah.
Stop recording. Cut.
Been, yeah. there've been other changes too. I mean, the defensive line is remade since last season, and yeah, it's I would say mixed results, but I think most of the guys they brought in have done well when they've been in there. It hasn't been as dominant as what we thought it would. Of course, with Miles out now, it's not going to be as dominant because he draws a lot of attention while he's in there from everybody except the officials. On the holding calls, yeah. He doesn't get those enough, but, go ahead.
Well, I'm just, Vernon was brought in. He's been a Pro Bowler and a stud, in Miami and New York, and he's come here and really done nothing. He hasn't done a damn thing. And if you guys remember early in the year, we played a lot of teams with backup offensive tackles, and Myles Garrett was going to feast on those guys. It was Tennessee and, some other guys, these third, fourth string tackles that Garrett was going to chew up, and it never happened. So I think that speaks to the underachieving, of the whole team.
Yeah, I really expected this defensive line to just overwhelm some teams, to really just take over some games. And they've had their spots where they made some nice plays, but they've never really just taken a game over. You watch San Francisco, for example, and maybe they're just that much better than the Browns defensive line. I have a hard time believing that they're that much more talented than the Browns defensive line with the guys the Browns have. They might be better, but are they that much better? Well, that San Francisco defensive line absolutely just destroys some teams.
They destroyed our team and that offensive line. But I think in that vein, the Browns had three or four top-notch, defensive linemen, and the 49ers have six first-round draft picks or something. So there might have been a little bit of depth on that one. But
yeah, you're right. They're better, but.
But what's scary is too is like I you always depend on like you guys were saying, our defense. We're supposed to be like the super, super crazy group of guys that were just gonna, tear up their offense, and they really haven't. You mentioned that, there's some sparks here and there, but because I don't have a lot of faith in our offense, I've always leaned on the defense. Like, as long as our defense steps up, they keep them from scoring, or they keep them at least to three. Or you always pray that there's like a pick six or something. Very rarely do I ever think like, okay, our offense is going to come out here and win the game. To me, it's always like the defense is going to slow them down, stop them, and then hopefully the offense scores an accidental touchdown and we win.
Wow.
You like that?
That's a change from last year, that's for sure.
Well, the way this team is built, you guys, this offense should be putting up more than 20 points each game, and you expect the defense to hold the opponent to under 20. I mean, that should be the formula, and that's just not how it's been most weeks.
Here, I got a question for you too. Do you think the Browns, when Ward and Williams missed a month, Greedy and Denzel, do you think they played better at corner? Because these two haven't done a damn thing all year. I mean, with Mitchell and TJ Carey, and I think those guys played better.
The guys that are playing now.
Well, no. When Greedy and Denzel were hurt for a month, they missed four games. They were coming back this next week, but no, they can't make it. But,
Oh yeah, I remember.
And they had their, they had TJ Carey, Terrence, or
Mitchell, and some other guys out there.
And they played
some
pretty decent offenses, and they played pretty damn good.
They did. Those guys can't play man-to-man as well. They just can't because they're not as fast. They can't cover quite as well, but they're better up closer at the line. They're tougher players. They're probably better tacklers. I definitely get what you're saying. I think Denzel and Greedy have had their moments this season, but Denzel has not looked like the Pro Bowler that he was last season, and I'll give Greedy a break. I think Greedy's played decent this season. Most corners don't play great in their first, in their rookie season. I'll give Greedy a kind of a pass. I think he's done fair for his rookie season.
What do you think, Laura?
I don't know. I don't have any comment on it. I don't remember. Aren't you glad you got me on? today she's to talk about drinking. Things. I don't know.
She's drinking right now, Rod. That's why she don't remember.
She's hitting the Dasani real hard too. Yeah, that's okay. Right. I understand. That's all right. So, did you have other changes in mind, Terry, that you were thinking of bringing up from last season?
Well, no, I just, you know, if you look at every part of the team, it's pretty much been, you know, other than Nick Chubb, it's been pretty much underwhelming. I mean, you know, I remember, again, you and I talking, you had Mayfield penciled in for 40 touchdowns. He may not get to 20. So.
Yeah, no kidding. I would never would have guessed he would have been fighting to get the 20 touchdown passes.
You know, Odell Beckham Jr. is going to struggle to get to six or seven touchdowns and 1,000 yards, maybe.
Odell has two touchdown catches right now.
Wow.
I just put out projections on Twitter for the full season based on being through 12 games, and I think Odell's at two. He's two touchdowns. He's on target to hit like 1,100 yards receiving, which is more than what you would think. But Jarvis is on target for over 1,200 yards, and I think I can't remember seven or eight touchdowns. Maybe I think he has five at this point, five or six. So Jarvis is having a heck of a season, but the touchdowns are down for the receivers, definitely.
Yeah, and Jarvis, he just started getting hot, you know, because I think in the beginning of the year he wasn't getting many looks, and so I think that's, I mean, for him it's good, you know, maybe that's Baker's new favorite toy, or just able to
Jarvis has really played well. He really has. You got to give him credit.
Well, I know you like Jarvis, so
who, me? Rod likes him.
No, I think you both do.
I do. He gives good hugs.
He does. Yeah, you caught up with him at the softball game, right?
Isn't I did. I snuck up
That's
in there.
That's pretty cool, yeah.
Lauren is a professional stalker. If you need a celebrity met, she will go find him. If there's a celebrity in town, she will weasel her way in there.
Well, we want Freddie Kitchens for the podcast, Lauren.
I tried to get him. I texted him four times. And he said, leave me the F alone, would you? And I was like, damn, rude. Dude. I said, you know, dude.
Did he actually reply to you?
No.
Okay, I didn't think so.
He can't. Right. I think the T-shirt thing messed it up. If somebody had, you know, somebody blew that out of proportion, you know, if somebody found out he was on a podcast with us, somebody had blown that out of proportion.
Oh, I wouldn't expect him, especially during the season. I don't think he would do something like this, but we would love to have him on and actually talk to him. It would be,
it would be
pretty darn cool. So
it would be cool.
I just think it's cool to have Lauren on here. If Freddie or Lauren, I'd probably go on Lauren.
Oh, well, thank you.
Point there. Yeah.
Well, because she was spazzy at one point. She said she was spazzy.
Right.
And didn't remember the games last year until a certain point.
That's right. I remember there was one that I got home. It was like 5 o'clock, and I went right to bed. I'm like, good night.
5 o'clock.
Yeah. True story.
Wow.
So Rod, what do you think of some of the differences with last year?
Well, I mean, I just think it was just I really don't know. I mean, it's just a little different vibe. I think the team really kind of rallied when Hugh got fired. Rallied together, you know, whether it's how much credit you want to give Greg Williams, you know, maybe it's just the team kind of pulling together and, you know, and did well at the end. And I think they did the same when Baker came in and started playing when Tyrod Taylor got injured. So I think there were just some rallying points. And I just think for whatever reason that the beginning of the season, when they started out with a poor record, it's just, you know, and so many tough games, it just kind of made this season tough to just kind of get things rolling.
What, this year?
Yeah, this year. So I don't think this team is that far away. You know, I think there are people who want to blow this thing up. I'll say that because people want to get rid of Freddie. And to me, that's kind of blowing it up. And I really don't want to get into that discussion here because I've been doing nothing but talking about that all week on Twitter. But anyways, you know, I think that this team can make some adjustments to the offensive line and a few other places, and I think they could very easily come out and start strong next season, and who knows where that would go.
I like that.
Yeah, that would work. They did kind of have it, you know, Baltimore, for example, and this is not an excuse, but they started off with what they have, Cincinnati, Miami, Arizona before they got cooking. They had a pretty easy schedule. So they got rolling, you know, downhill pretty quickly. Where the
got a lot of confidence going. Yeah.
Yeah.
And now
the teams that the Browns lost to early on that were considered tough.
They don't look good. Yeah.
They don't look good now, like the Rams, for example. But,
yeah.
You know, I would have liked to have seen if the schedules were inverted. I mean, you can't play the, you know, the hindsight 2020 thing. But, you know, if we had started off with Miami and then Cincinnati and then Arizona. You just
don't know. Yeah, the schedule was not in the Browns' favor this season, and all those primetime games, those early Monday night, Sunday night games, go to the East Coast, go to the West Coast. I mean, I'm not trying to make excuses for them, but it was definitely a tough road for them this year.
And I do agree with you about Freddie. I think he's a good coach. You know, if you look at some of the best coaches in history. You know, I don't know if Lauren's old enough to remember Belichick, but, you know, people tried to run him out halfway through his first year. People were trying to run him out. So,
yeah. Well, he had losing seasons 4 out of his first 5 years. And people say, well, he didn't have talent. Well, he had talent, guys. He had talent. Go back and look.
They had a pretty good team. But, you know, you look at all the top coaches over the history, and some of even the top coaches now, you know, they didn't start off blazing. You know, they started off, you know, 5-11, 4-12, in their first year. So,
I went back today and looked at Marty Schottenheimer, and he was actually 500 his first two seasons with the Browns, like 4-4, and then 8-8.
They didn't have any talent, so I mean, what do you expect?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But anyhow.
Those were the days.
Yeah, those were. Well, guys, unfortunately, we've been talking for quite a while here.
We're gonna have to
wrap things up. And
you promised us half an hour, Rod.
It's been over half an hour.
Is it really?
It has. If you guys are so inclined, this would be a great time for you to give out your Twitter handles if you want anybody to follow you on Twitter. Lauren?
Absolutely. I would love to. So you can follow me at Joker's Cuckoo. And I warn you though, it's a roller coaster of a Twitter account, so follow at your own risk.
There is some, she's right up. It goes from rated G to rated R++.
Yeah. She's a fun follow, and she's a great writer. You guys need to check her stuff out at Big Play, too.
Thank you very much.
Welcome.
And as far as me, I used to be under Triple Dog Dare after the, Christmas Story movie?
Mm-hmm.
I simplified it and went back to my initials. So TB Phelan, which is spelled Phelan. That's it.
All right. Guys, this has been a lot of fun.
It has. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Rod, you're the bestest, Rod.
thanks, Terry. You are.
Can we get on again before episode 60 hits?
You sure can. sure can. I'll have my people get with your people. And
We're the every 30 show of people.
Every 30.
Every 30. 30 for 30.
I like it.
Anyway, it's been fun, Rod.
All right.
Sorry I brought zero entertainment to the podcast today.
You did great. All right. Thanks, guys. Going to welcome my brother Jeff in. How's it going, Jeff?
Hey, Rod. I'm okay. I kind of feel like Bill Murray on Groundhog Day, you know, just losing in Pittsburgh again.
Yeah, it seems to be the same thing, you know, no matter what. It just kind of seems to happen.
Well, it's a tough place to play, you know. Yeah, it's a tough place to play, and we don't have a great track record there. And frankly, I think we just got beat yesterday. We just flat got beat. We didn't beat ourselves. We just flat got beat.
Yeah, I think I have to agree with you. We can say a lot of the Browns. I think a lot of almost every unit, underperformed, but I guess you got to give the Steelers some credit. Our offensive line looked bad, but, maybe you got to credit the Steelers' defensive line. And the same on the Browns' defensive line. They didn't get any pressure, but Steelers' offensive line stepped up. So,
I mentioned to you during the game yesterday, how many times the Steelers rushed four and just mauled our guys, with a four-man rush. I mean, they weren't bringing blitzes or all the things that you're used to the Steelers doing, mixing up coverage. They weren't doing any of that. They were just flat bull rushing us back into Baker. And our offensive line guy, they couldn't hold the point of attack. I've never seen such an uninspired performance from an offensive line as I saw yesterday.
It was the complete opposite of what happened in Cleveland. Really, right. I mean, our guys were just throwing them all over the place in Cleveland, and just tables turned completely. And yesterday,
that last drive, I think I mentioned that Freddie even kept the tight end in to give Baker a little bit of extra time on that drive. So you got six guys blocking, they're rushing four, and they're still hitting him.
Yeah, yeah.
Makes sense. You can't win, in that scenario. You're just not going to win.
Right, right. Well, we got a couple things we're going to talk about. The expectations were high for the season, and it's pretty clear now. The Browns are out of contention at this point. I don't know if they're mathematically eliminated, but we know what the facts are.
Right.
I just kind of thinking, and you and I had talked about how the expectations, they were high, probably too high. I was as guilty as anybody. I thought this team was going to put up a pretty gaudy record this season. I was wrong for several reasons. I felt like you got to get realistic about this franchise. And I think as fans of this franchise, we're fans. Our fandom is based on hope and tradition. Mm-hmm. It's kind of what I come down to. It's not based true. On. We don't follow this team because it's won a lot. And I was looking at some numbers. This team has won double digit win season since 1994.
Yeah.
And if I'm counting right, 74 seasons counting this season, the Browns have 18. Double-digit win seasons.
Wow.
Okay. Seven double-digit win seasons since 1970. That's almost 50. That's 50 years.
50 years.
50 years, okay. and three of those were back-to-back-to-back in 86, 7, and 8.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
So, you throw those three out, and yeah, there have been four double-digit win seasons, and they've been sporadic, since 1970, except for those three seasons.
Yeah.
So if the Browns are at 5-7 right now, if they win six or seven games, it's going to be the first time they've won, that they've had back-to-back six or seven win seasons since 2001 and 2002.
Jeez.
Okay. And if you go back to the three seasons before 2001 and 2002, the Browns won a total of 10 games those three seasons combined.
Mm-hmm.
So it just shows you how bad it's been.
Yeah.
So, I don't want to bring everybody down, but we have to realize that you got to walk before you can run. And I don't want people to expect to be happy with winning six or seven or eight games, but this team's got to build a foundation, and we've got to see progress, and it's got to come incrementally. And I think it's just going to take a little bit more time than what people are expecting. You can't just throw a bunch of players out there and expect them to go out and win the Super Bowl one year. It's just not going to happen.
Right. Well, you know, it's not fantasy football. I think everybody sort of fell into that trap, and it was easy to do. You know, when you add up all of the stats of all of the weapons that the offense has, you start thinking, wow, you know, no one's going to be able to stop this. Just like we were real high on the defensive line, and we've kind of talked a little bit about how, you know, we haven't seen the sack numbers that we thought we would, and so it's just not fantasy. You have to still roll the ball out there and play every game. I think it's interesting, or it would be interesting to dig a little deeper into those stats and just see where other teams land if you kind of dug in the same way. Obviously, you know, the Patriots are the exception, you know, where, you know, they win every year. You could probably pull out a handful of teams that have had some historic success without really, you know, going into those valleys for very long. Mm-hmm. But, you know, then there's an awful lot of teams like Buffalo that, you know, have just been mediocre, you know, and Detroit and the Bears, you know, who, like the Browns, have had occasional success, but really haven't sustained it for very long, you know.
That's right.
So, yeah, I think the fan base, the media, sort of built the expectation level a little too high for this team. You know, you had a complete roster teardown a couple of years ago. You don't just magically put that back together with some, you know, drafts and some free agent acquisitions. It took a while to get that bad, you know, where we were 0-16. It's reasonable to think that it's going to take a while for it to get significantly better.
That's right.
But the, I guess the qualifier is, you know, you see every year you see a team, you know, San Francisco comes to mind, who, you know, were pretty bad last year, and they're probably going to be in the Super Bowl this year. So, you know, Kansas City was that way a couple of years ago. I guess if you catch lightning in a bottle, and it seems like there's one every year,
it can happen, but there's also, it happens a lot that these teams like a San Francisco could end up going 14-2 this season, end up, you know, not making it to the Super Bowl, maybe lose the conference championship. Then next season they drop down to go, they lose more games. And who knows, maybe it takes them 2-3 more seasons before they make or win a Super Bowl. Even though they built the foundation now, you just don't know. Football is so tricky.
Here's another example. I mean, the Philadelphia Eagles. 2 years ago, they won the Super Bowl with Nick Foles. You know, mm-hmm. Carson Wentz was hurt, or Foles probably wouldn't have even played. Yesterday, they trip all over themselves, losing to the Dolphins. This is probably the worst or second worst team in the league. You know, and it's essentially the same team, you know, but now instead of, you know, everybody saying what a hero Doug Peterson is, you know, at a minimum, he's probably going to have to change a bunch of people on his staff if he even survives. So, it's football's fickle.
Very much so. Very much so. So you want to kind of rearrange segments a little bit and introduce something new this week. So let's kind of kick that thing off.
Okay. So, I guess when you're in the playoff hunt, you kind of approach things one way. But, you know, now that I think I saw today, we've got like a 6% chance at the playoffs, which, like you said, is we're pretty much thinking about next year now, right? So we're in roster evaluation mode again. And I'm sure the front office and the coaching staff are starting to look at individuals and saying, who's going to help us next year? So this new segment I want to start is called, Are You Part of the Solution or Are You Part of the Problem? it's an old business adage that you can't be both. So yeah. I'm going to throw some names at you, and I'd like you to give me your thoughts on whether you think this person is part of the solution or part of the problem. And it, you know, maybe there may be some gray areas here. Okay. But let's just talk about where they fit going into next year. Okay. The first one is kind of an easy one. Demarius Randle.
Well, you know, not long ago, I really would have thought he was part of the solution. But I think with the missing games and I think the contract demand that he's going to have, I think he's, you know, and just being scratched from the Pittsburgh game because of skipping a practice, I think he's going to be seen by the Browns as part of the problem. I just yep. think that's how it's going to be. So I think he's done in Cleveland.
I would have to agree just based on this past week. 27 years old, coming off his rookie deal, trying to get paid in the offseason.
And we've seen what these safeties get paid too. It's outrageous.
Yeah, he's going to be $10 million a year.
No doubt.
I'm sure that, you know, that part of the reason the Browns drafted a bunch of safeties and, you know, brought in a lot of guys was they knew that, you know, they were going to face that with him. But, you know, if the guy goes out and has a great season, the Browns have plenty of cap space.
Yeah, you can justify it.
Yeah, he could have had his contract here. Mm-hmm.
I agree.
But for whatever reason. Okay, Chris Hubbard.
I have to tell you, I don't know the contract status on all these guys. Chris Hubbard, to me, is a guy who could end up being like number 6 or 7 on the offensive line next year.
Yeah.
I don't think if the Browns are improving, I don't think they want him out there playing tackle next season.
Right. I don't know the exact contract status either. If memory serves me, I think they signed him from the Steelers and overpaid to get him.
A little bit. So, I think he's probably got at least a year left, but I don't know.
Cause he was a backup with them and we paid him starter money, I believe. I hope to God we find some tackles this off season.
Yeah.
Hubbard is maybe part of it is the state of flux of the, guard situation next to him. But he is consistently getting beat. And, you know, for Baker to constantly be rolling out right is not where our offense needs to be. So right. I would agree. I think he's probably relegated to a backup role, if not released in training camp.
Mm-hmm.
Just based on his contract.
Yeah.
And who they bring in. All right. Now it's going to get a little tougher. Olivier Vernon.
I mean, he's got a big contract too. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Very big. I think number 2 on the team.
Wow.
Or top 3 or 4 at least.
Yeah, I think there's going to be, again, it depends on his contract, the status and what kind of guaranteed money he has left, what kind of hit the Browns would take. And if there's an ability to be able to move him, I think the Browns probably feel pretty good about some other guys, you know, to go out there. I think they like Chad Thomas and
I was
going to
say, have we seen enough from Chad Thomas?
I don't think you've seen enough from him yet. I think they feel good about having him in the rotation. I don't know if you feel good enough to have him as one of your starting defensive ends.
Right.
But, you know, I don't know that we've seen enough of Chad Thomas out there with Myles Garrett. And, you know, and that's the other consideration is Myles going to be out there game one of next season?
Right.
You know, we don't know that yet. So,
right.
I think those will all be considerations for Vernon.
Yeah. So this is all very early speculation. You know, we've plenty of time to talk about this in the off season, right? But here's some guys that are starters, high talent guys, right? And my question is. Do we see a future with them, and are how long are they going to be able to perform at a high level, right? OBJ, you think he's on this team next year?
That's a tough one. I almost guarantee everybody in Cleveland wants OBJ back. But for me, he hasn't made that connection yet with Baker, and there have been a little incidences of him kind of saying, "Look at me," you know, all right. The things with the watch and the cleats and everything. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like he's had a bad season, but he hasn't been like we've expected. But a lot of that's because of the coverage he's drawing. So I'll give him the benefit of the doubt there. But for me, you know, I would take Jarvis Landry over OBJ, and people can laugh at me, but look at what Jarvis has done. He and Baker have such a great rapport, and Jarvis is open all the time. Okay. He's just open. Yeah. So if it's me and if the Browns get blown away with an offer for OBJ and could get some great draft picks back, you know, like, kind of, you know, better than what they gave up for him, I could see him moving on from him. I just could.
Yeah, I see that as well. It's a hard one because you have to look at, does the impact of what he does on the field outweigh all the distractions? It's just an interesting perspective here. You know, we've talked a bit about the third receiver, and we've kind of been hunting all year long for a third receiver. If we don't have OBJ next year, who steps in to fill his shoes? You know who the number three receiver on the Browns right now is? Nick Chubb.
You mean as far as number of receptions?
Yeah, 31 receptions, 245 yards.
Yeah, yeah. Which is kind of surprising.
I mean, so you know, it makes you wonder, if we move on from OBJ, who do we replace him with?
Well, that's the thing. People can look and, you know, and even me, I mean, and say he hasn't been as advertised, but he's got what, 57 catches, 805 yards. You know, it's nothing to scoff at. And if you take him out, it is going to have a major impact. So, you know, I think people have been waiting for Rashard Higgins to kind of show up a little bit, and he's been out there playing. But when you have OBJ and Jarvis and a tight end and Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb, you don't need to throw to your third wide receiver that often.
Right.
You just don't. It's not that – I don't think it's that Baker is ignoring him or doesn't want to throw to him. It's just how it's working out.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I think from a offensive versatility standpoint, we really still haven't figured out how to use the tight end. So there's a lot of other options there to balance the offense. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it's going to come down to, does somebody overwhelm Dorsey with a trade opportunity? Be interesting to monitor that in the off season.
Yeah.
Okay. Now it really gets tough. Baker Mayfield.
Oh, that's not tough for me. He's part of the solution. We regardless of how Baker has performed as a whole this season, he's the best quarterback we've had in Cleveland since Bernie, without a doubt. People can say whatever they want about him. He's had his issues this season. I think it's been a little bit of being a sophomore and kind of having different things thrown at him. He's gone through probably some mental things as far as trying to figure stuff out. You know, maybe doubting himself a little bit after having some bad games. But I think he's really, you know, overall, he's played a lot better in the last, what, 4 or 5 games. You know, not that he played spectacular.
With the exception, exception of this week.
He didn't play great this week. But
I don't know how much of that was related to the hand injury.
Yeah, I'm going to give him a pass on this week because that hand injury, who knows? I mean,
Here's the thing for me, okay, and I agree with the talent level. We talked last time about Baker showing me that he can win a game on the last drive when, you know, they're down and they need him to put together a drive. It was not ideal circumstances There were things like the hand injury to consider, but I was pretty disappointed in the last drive against the Steelers.
I think
that's, you know, that's like you said, that's being a second year quarterback. That's not really having the experience, not having the guys on the same page around you that other veteran quarterbacks have. So, you know, right now with Baker, not saying that he doesn't have the talent level, not saying that there isn't a good potential on the horizon for him to develop that, develop those skills. Right now, Baker's not winning us games that he should be winning us. That doesn't mean he's not going to be here next year. I just think there's more growth that needs to happen from Baker. So everybody has a little bit of responsibility in this, right?
Oh, sure.
All right. Yeah. Okay. You're going to love this one. Freddie.
I go to war for Freddie every day. I think Freddie is very similar to Baker in that that he's a young coach and he's making mistakes. He's got to learn things, but you know, pulling the plug on a guy in his first year when he's trying to figure some things out. You know, I just don't see it. I think the Browns need some stability, but that's not the reason to keep him. I just think Freddie has a lot of characteristics that make up, you know, that are necessary to be a good coach. And, you know, I just think he's still trying to figure it out a little bit. Okay. I think people are way too hard on Freddie. They blame him for everything. And I think the guy can turn into a good coach if he's just given a little bit of time. And I know everybody's screaming, oh, we don't have time. We got the team to win right now. Well, you know what? We're not winning this.
We've never had
Super Bowl this year. Yeah, we never have the time. Okay. Guess what? If you dump Freddie, you're setting the clock back to zero again. Okay. You're starting all over, and you're not going to the Super Bowl that year either when you bring in a new coach. Okay. Because it's going to take those schemes, his new staff, his new players, because you're going to want to change the roster up a bit for the new coach.
Exactly.
You're looking at a rebuild, okay?
Right.
When you bring in a new coach. I'm with Freddie, you know, and I'm not with Freddie until the death. I mean, Freddie's going to have to he's going to have to show growth, but right now I think he's part of the solution.
So let me ask you this. Freddie, you know, never a head coach before at any level, well documented. How many of the guys on his staff do you think are his guys?
You mean guys that he chose to bring in versus Dorsey picking?
I just think guys that, you know, he's been in the trenches with, guys that he's on the same page with.
I think almost share the all same of vision. Them are. I think they all wanted to come to Cleveland because of Freddie. Now, some of them had connections with Dorsey, but I think that they were drawn to Freddie because of the kind of personality he has and the you know, what they saw in Cleveland too.
Okay. I wonder if a lot of those guys aren't here because of the talent, sort of looking at things the same way we as fans have looked at it, that, hey, on paper, this is a great team. I can build my resume by turning this thing around, right? I don't know that Freddie had as much influence. Maybe he did.
I think he did on some of the guys. I'll give you that. That very well may be the case for Monken and Wilkes. I think Freddie and Wilkes had a relationship, though, already from Arizona. Yeah. But Monken, and I have to say, the whole situation with Monken is a complete puzzle to me, because nobody ever really talks about it. We don't really know what's going on there as far as who's doing what, whose plays are being called, who figures what out, you know, what that relationship is. So I don't know. I almost expect Monken to be gone after this season just because it doesn't seem like we really hear a single word about the guy. And he was brought in with all this offensive knowledge. Freddie's calling the plays, and Monken's just kind of lurking in the background. We don't know if it's a good relationship, a negative relationship, or what at this point.
Right. I think it's interesting to look at the coaching staff like we've looked at the roster and say, hey, these are a bunch of guys with a ton of NFL experience that have never worked together before. Shouldn't we give them some time to gel, just like we've talked about the roster needs time to gel?
Yeah, you would think so. You definitely think so. This entire coaching staff was put together. You know, I think there were, what, maybe one or two guys that were here last year, if not mistaken, with Freddie.
If two, I think, yeah.
Yeah. It's everybody else came from all different places. So yeah, right. I'm with you. It's everything kind of coming together. So.
Yep. Okay. So I'm going to skip over Jimmy Haslam because I think we've beat that up in the past, and I think he's done a decent job of keeping his mouth shut to this point. Not that a vote of confidence from Jimmy Haslam would really help Freddie.
So not really.
Let's just jump right over that one, and I'm going to wrap it up by asking you this one. What role do you think the fans and the media have in being part of the solution or part of the problem for this team?
I think the fans can be part of the solution by demonstrating some patience. I think that could happen. Realistically, it's not going to happen because – let's face it, this is Cleveland. We know how everybody is. The Browns finish under 500. They're going to want Freddie's head on a silver platter. They're going to be screaming for a new regime. A lot of people probably want Dorsey out too. Some people may even want a new quarterback. It's just how it is. People cannot, and I'm saying people, it's enough people to just keep the pot stirring continuously, even if it's not a majority. If we could just, you know, get those people to kind of just quiet down for maybe one off season, just kind of let this thing roll and see what would happen. It would be nice because it doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen. We lost to Pittsburgh. Okay. It sucked. It was horrible. Should have won the game. And should have been able to beat them. But, man, people on Twitter are like, just like, you would have never known that the Browns had even won a game this season. Everybody's just afraid to fricassee everybody. That's just horrible.
Yeah.
You can just totally forget about the fact that the Browns won three in a row before that. Doesn't make any difference.
Right. I mean, every week, this is the most important game of the year.
You got to win them all, too.
Yeah. I mean, to a certain extent in the NFL, that's true from week to week. Okay.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, every game's important. Okay. But nobody wins every game. The fans have an unrealistic expectation for an immediate turnaround if we just catch lightning in the bottle, like we talked about. Yeah. If you're going to build a team that's going to be a consistent winner, you have to put the foundation in place. What this team does is it rips the foundation completely out, throws a couple rocks in the mud, and starts building again.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the thing starts teetering, they rip it out again. We've never in my lifetime had a long-term commitment to winning in this town. I mean, probably the closest I've seen to that is Dan Gilbert when he had LeBron. But there again, you had sort of this window, right, where you knew that the guy was going to leave. But when it comes to football in Cleveland, the idea that we're suddenly going to find the right coach, or we're suddenly going to find the right general manager, and we're going to all of a sudden flip the switch and be a great team is ludicrous.
Yeah, that's true.
The only way it's ever going to happen is if the fans adjust their expectation level, because everything else is driven by the fans. It's what gets the media writing the ridiculous articles that we have to look at week in and week out. It's what makes owners fire coaches in knee-jerk fashion because they think they're going to lose the fan base.
Yeah.
The reality is, you and I were at the Rams game. You got 80,000 or however many people sitting in the stadium, you know, rooting for the team, and you got one loudmouth up above us screaming, "Fire Freddie."
Yeah. Yep.
But that's the guy that gets heard.
Yeah, that's true.
You know? True. So
it's sad. It's sad.
I hate to say it, but the fans in this town are getting the team that they deserve.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if they want a new coach every 2 years and they never have any stability or any, you know, any true success, then that's true. All right. Well, we're up against it, Jeff. And
all right, Rod.
And good talking to you.
Yep. I'll catch you next time.
All right. Take care.
That's going to do it for this episode of the Browns Blitz. Remember that Clay Matthews Jr. belongs in the Hall of Fame, hopefully this coming year. And we will catch you all next time.